This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 5th of March, 1972. The title of this lecture is Revision of the Product Org Officer System, Part 1. This tape is 77 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Okay, this is the 5th of March, AD22, an Establishment Officer Lecture Number 5. I am lecturing to you on the basis of a very upstage, highly advanced graduate level. Undoubtedly, some hearing these lectures will get disestablished by saying, "My God, I didn't realize there was that much to it." Or, "What are all those heavy, big words like is?" The day an establishment officer comes on post fully trained will probably never arrive. Because I am still learning about establishment. After 22 years in Dianetics and Scientology organizations, and I haven't quite counted up how many years on the track. There have been some very fancy org boards. There have been some very fancy organizations. There have been several systems, several billion systems, several infinities of systems of organization. And the Scientology organization, as you can read in a policy letter, was taken from one of the better interplanetary organizations, which, as far as I know, is still running. And its basis was mind, body, product. Now, the question will be asked at once, how does the establishment officer's system fit in to the product org officer system? Well, it fits in very, very easily. If you change org officer to program officer, and if you change HAS to establishment officer throughout the series, and possibly some minor change in lines, why, you will have a conversion of the system. It is a conversion mainly then of title, but the concentration of function and has not, in actual fact, varied. When I first started out with the product org officer system, I piloted it myself, I found immediately, having gotten out the product, that I had in my hands a program. Trying to get out that product resulted in a program. Thinking about getting out a product in the future resulted in a program. And these programs both required a formal investigation by me. Not a point aboard of investigation to discover. No. And not by asking a lot of people, but with the eye. In other words, look, don't listen. And find the why. And that would turn into a program. Well, that program required a certain amount of execution. The programs were not always feasible, and a program takes longer to get out than a product. The speed of establishment necessary to accomplish a program always exceeds the hope of the product officer. The product officer looks it over, and he's set a target of some kind or another, and he wants some this or that. He wants this new course started and so on, and he looks it over and sees what he's got to get, and therefore he will turn out some sort of a program. He's got a new course. This course has to have a supervisor, and has to have PACs, and it has to have promotion, and it has to have maybe a tour, and it has to have this, and it has to have that, and it has to have an opening date, that sort of thing, you see. Rat-a-tat-tat. And it's got to have somebody sign them up who won't say, oh, you're here to sign up for the new course? Well, I don't know. I just have to ask somebody, and so on. It's all right. Do you believe that a registrar could exist who forgot to take the people's money? It just happened in Auckland. That's why Auckland was going broke. So you see, if he says it has to be registrared, the product officer, why, that would mean that the registration of the course was not just simply to get a blank. That person would have to be genned in. And little gen-ins like, talk to the person, here is a flyer for the course, it tells what it is, here's the information about the course, and here is the cost of the course. We just started a course and nobody had set its cost yet, for instance. Here is what you do, and here is the hat relating to interviews, and you take the money. Show you how daffy this can get. You said the registrar can invoice the money received, see, intention. Because we found out in London, after they were signed up, if they weren't invoiced, huge piles of sign-ups accumulated to the cashier. Some of them as much as a year old. The person had left the registration office, but had never arrived at the cashier's office for some reason or another, and the cashier either wasn't there, wasn't on post, or there was no cashier, and so all of their business was falling between these two posts. So we remembered in the earliest days that the registrar always did write up her invoice with her cash and so on, and then turn this over into the cashier. A policy letter was unfortunately headed, Registrar Invoices, so do you know what happened? I just got a horrible suspicion when I looked at this. This is one of these things where you do an investigation by flair. That is to say, the obvious answer to make this situation would be this goofiness. And you hit these every once in a while. Now be careful, because you can also, don't get drunk with your godliness on this, because you can also be wrong. But in this and many other cases, these are very right. And I said, my God, they have dumped all registration, all invoicing, and all money handling and balancing on registrars. I'll just bet you this is the case. And we instantly put it out on the telex lines and looked all over and so forth. It's true. They had taken the cashier off post because the registrar invoiced now. The registrar was invoicing books, mail. The registrar was writing all invoices that were written by the whole org and was taking in the money, was balancing it up. So complete nuttinesses can occur that you don't believe. So when the product officer says, and register the course, where does the establishment officer fit? Now, that means he's got to have a hatted registrar. Now, there was this sad fellow one time who was found hanging himself, and he was a former establishment officer who was reasonable. That would be the most deadly flaw that an establishment officer could have, be reasonable. Next to it would be a deadly flaw of take somebody's explanation. I have heard all the explanations I ever care to hear. And do you know, I look forward to the day when a correct one is given me. Do you know, I've never had a correct explanation from a staff member why this thing wasn't working. It's almost uniform. They almost always have the wrong reason, and that's why it doesn't correct. Now, let's go over into auditing tech, and we know that if the person doesn't have the right problem, it won't resolve. So they're usually trying to solve the wrong problem. Well, that applies to every staff member there is. If he has a problem on his post, it is not the problem he has on his post, or it would not be a problem. Do you follow? It has to be a false problem for the thing to persist. So the right why is another way of saying the correct problem or the correct reason. So as we look down the line, we find the product org officer HAS lineup was frail just to this degree that it doesn't take long to write up and even to do an investigation. Although if you do a wrong investigation, it can take 6 or 8 months of redoing the investigation and redoing it and redoing it and redoing it until you really do get the right way. And that can happen to the best. But it doesn't take long, proportionately speaking. Now, it is easier to demand the product than it is to get the program bits executed that will give you the product. Now, it is easier to demand the program bits of the program than it is to establish in the meshed universe. Many Thetans disagree with this. That is to say, they disagree with this idea, and you'll find this quite prevalent. It extends all over the place, in other words. The guy says, well, why can't I just sort of make a postulate and there it is? Well, that is the way they made the meshed universe, and that is perfectly true. But working in the meshed universe, there is amount of time involved, there's preparation, there is construction. But a Thetan will hang up on this. So he says, well, bop, and therefore it ought to materialize, see? $8,000 GI, bop, it just ought to materialize. And almost no one ever estimates the amount of programming and organization it requires to get an $8,000 GI. So look at these, the quick postulate of the product, followed by the slower, but nevertheless fairly rapid, 1, 2, 3, 4, of getting the program in for that particular thing. His idea of demanding the product is he wants it far sooner than it can be accomplished, and the demand of the program checker is he's demanding it far sooner than it could be gotten, and he is demanding it through other actions in progress, routine post duties, and DevT. And a wrong program will itself generate DevT. So getting the program actually accomplished is sufficiently arduous and sufficiently difficult from the viewpoint of establishment that you very often get not-dones and half-dones. There's a PL on this, not-dones, half-dones, and backlogs. The not-dones and the half-dones will result in a backlog. And the backlog kicks their brains in because it serves as DevT to all fresh traffic. So, the system, the product org officer system, had these frailties. That it was very, very easy to demand the product, to do the investigation, and to write up a program. Now, it required a considerable longer period of time to check out that exact program and run around and see everybody and get all those points in. That would be the org officer now, would be the deputy. He's the program officer, and trying to get those points in and complied with, usually the org officer wound it up in the lap of the HAS, and the HAS just had org officer around his neck. It looked like one of these statues where this ancient mythological family was attacked by snakes. There's just snakes all over the place. And just boom, boom, boom. And they sort of went bonkers. So it wasn't posted in proportion to the amount of work necessary. Just that. It made overloads. In other words, a product officer could very easily overload the org officer. And get this fixed and get that fixed. You got that now. Oh, that's fine. And the org officer says, okay, and he runs at a dead, flat-out run. Well, the fact that the product officer is running made the org officer sprint like a racehorse. Now, these guys, the org officer doing that, had to get establishment out of an HAS who was already swamped, backlogged, routine duties, so on, gone dogged. Do you see what was essentially wrong? All that was wrong is that the system was imbalanced. Now, the product officer could very easily have his hat ripped off then by getting interiorized into organization, make do, other things, and a great many things are demanded of a person who is the head of something that are not necessarily product at all. Oh, he has social things, and he's got this and that and the other thing. He's got administrative lines. He has in-basket trouble, and he's got seniors way up the line are saying, why in hell? Wrong why, you know, something like that. He's got to handle that. And so he really doesn't have too much of a purity of duty. His duty is very colored by all kinds of other things hitting him. He needs, in actual fact, a yeoman, if you wanted to go into a large org. He needs a CO's secretary, receptionist, to handle his traffic, shake the dev tea out of it, get it in some kind of order, keep his day, and tell people about appointments and things of that character. He needs a deputy to keep the yeoman or secretary's hat on. Keep that straightened out. It's really a sort of an interesting situation that I see by experience, whereas the deputy keeps this guy hatted, keeps the yeoman hatted, doesn't use him, but just makes sure that traffic handles right, you see? And just by that fact alone, his own job is enormously lightened. So this permits, then, a product officer to do an enormous amount of evaluation. Now you say, well, evaluation is really an I&R Department 3 action. No, it is not. It is a top flight action. Because he who does not evaluate will not be able to plan. And an org is running on that fellow's plans. If you are not in possession of fantastic quantities of information, you cannot evaluate. If you cannot evaluate, God help you, you cannot plan. So therefore, the product officer, if he has an idea of just sitting in one place in an org, he'd better disabuse himself of it. Now, if he had enough runners, and if he had enough aides or assistants or something like that to dig up this fact and dig up that fact, he might not have to run around, but orgs aren't at this stage of the game blessed with such a system. What then does the program officer do, that is the deputy? The deputy is administrative and lines, you see, program. The product officer's lines, the administrative functions of, and getting the program executed. Now, that in itself is an interesting trick. all programs should be published. They start with an evaluation. Then they've got a handling. And that plan is incorporated into a program. Data series 23 and 24 give you the layout. It isn't just a stylized layout. You skip some point of this layout while you hang yourself. All right. This copy, mimeograph copy of this, if you don't get it around to the staff, they don't know what you're doing. It gives them the existing scene. So, you've got a folder, and the mimeograph copy of that is on the left-hand inside cover of this folder, and it's marked master. And the program bits, target by target by target, are put into that folder. This folder is marked Ed Woof Woof AOLA, see, something like that. There is the side yellow tab that comes out. And the bits, as they are finished, go into that. Now, if the product officer is running somewhat single-handing, he would get that folder every time one of those targets was done. That would be put handed to him by his deputy. Target's done, it's all CSW, that's finished, checked, inspected, done. And it's marked over here on the little lines you see going out, and it says done. All right, and it's in the folder. Now, you accumulate those things up, and you get the whole thing. If he's rather suspicious of things, he keeps this one coming so that he can look over here and see how little. In other words, it's sort of a progress report. Actually, the full compliance is the full thing done. And if the organization were running very, very well, he would simply get the one folder with all the papers in it, all targets done, bang. And that would be a very ideal deputy. The technique by which this is done and how these things are nudged is contained in the LRH-COM check sheets. And the LRH-COM check sheets would be the deputies, or that would be his Bible by which he would go. Now, who is going to do most of these programs? Now, it's in divisions, and it's assigned to divisions. And it's assigned to every one of these targets in a program is assigned to somebody. Now, if it's essentially a training sort of an action to groove up something, you would see an establishment officer alert. Normally, it is simply to the division. Now, where does the establishment officer fit into this? He has to be aware that this is the load which is being required. And even if his name isn't on the target, he is a partner to that. That division has got to be formed up so it can do it. Now, I can tell you that when you throw a whole big extra load, let's say we're going to open five new courses in Wallabong.org. Now, that is a nice heavy hill for an establishment officer to climb all of a sudden. He'll immediately have a ridge in terms of personnel. He'll have a ridge in terms of training those personnel in order to train the personnel. In other words, it's a bind right away. He hasn't got anybody over in the SEM. There isn't anybody in the SEM compiling anything. In fact, the mimeograph machine has been broken down for a very long time, and it's very expensive to Xerox, and the organization has a policy that only five copies can be run off on the Xerox each day, and that you mustn't Xerox bulletins. It will seem to him everywhere he looks that the thing is utterly undoable. And he's liable to go into total apathy about the thing. In the first place, he isn't being required to do it. That he's being required to put the staff there that will do it. So by inference, that target is always to the establishment officer. Now, that's what happened to the product org system. A product org system is a very sound system. And simply by making the org officer a program officer and by having a sufficiently manned up org in terms of establishment officers, why the product org officer system becomes very workable. We've had a lot of experience with this system, so we know where we have to fill in the holes. And where we have to fill in the holes was simply overload. The org officer was overloaded because he was trying to handle this, that, or the other thing, because he wasn't backed up by the establishment officer. And the HAS was not about to be able to handle one tiny scrap of it. Now, the immediate result of all of this programming and so on in the establishment officer system will be the same as it was in the product org system. The first thought of an org officer was to organize things so that the product could get out. Now, that's not really part of his duties. It's the execution of the program that is his duty. Because his first thought was immediately go around and take over this carefully built-up division, take half the people out of that, put them over in some other division where they weren't hatted or trained, and then take the people out of that division and move them over to someplace else, and then the HAS, in desperation, would move all the downstats and untrained people that he had as expediters temporarily and move them up into the tech division as auditors, and then they'd move the qual division would move to HCO, and then the product officer would be the janitor. Oh, my God. In other words, this amount of impact of demand of product disestablished far more rapidly than anybody could establish anything. So it comes in under the heading of naughty, naughty, naughty. Musical chairs that may be desperate, but it won't be anywhere near as desperate if you musical chair this thing to get it done. And now it will get desperate. Oh, yes, we met the target today. Yes, we did today. But tomorrow, the cost of making that target was disestablishment left, right, upside, and down. So you have to hold the form of the org in spite of it. Now, one of the sorriest things that you'll run into will be personnel. Where to get personnel from? That is always the toughest one. Because when HCO was not getting new personnel, the org could only expand by musical chairs. So you will find then that the deputy product officer, the deputy CO, the deputy treasury sec, the deputy tech sec, so forth, he will only be able to expand by musical chairing unless there is a personnel pool. You say, well, yes, it's very costly to keep that many personnel hanging around and so forth and so forth. Oh, it may be costly, and finance may point it out to you as costly, but let me assure you, it costs 100 times as much not to have them. They didn't train auditors in the PAC area and didn't train auditors in the PAC area and didn't train auditors in the PAC area. They put auditors on for training in the PAC area. They were ripped off for personnel pool. And they didn't train auditors and they didn't train auditors. And then what do you hear? People talking about, well, they haven't got enough people and it's cost too much and that sort of thing. But now what do you hear? The cost of non-CORG auditors is so prohibitive as to have doubled the FP of the existing PAC SO orgs and is destroying them. Now, exactly how in the name of God did they get into that? That was just never putting out enough personnel on recruiting and giving recruiting trained staff member or trained Sea Org member enough attention as a product. So the product officer has always got a target of trained staff members, trained Sea Org members. When you see their orders, you will see that that is one of their product targets. You'd say, well, that's naturally establishment. No, it isn't. No, it is a legitimate product. It's a valuable product. Now, you could shift around a little bit and purify it and so on and say it isn't quite pure. Well, when it isn't, why, you're in trouble. So the establishment officer will mainly get in trouble over the subject of personnel. Now, there's a population explosion going on, and I wish to Christ somebody would inform me how men are far scarcer in 1972 than I ever found them in 325 B.C. How could they expend them back then? I remember around the turn of the millennium and so on, it is mobs unemployed. Well, right now, they keep them all that way with relief and dole and this and that and the other thing. And they've got some workable scheme or another. One of the silly ones, which we did a survey on people, what they liked and so on, just a general survey at a couple in the Scandinavian area, and we found what they liked best was welfare. And what they hated most was taxes. Oh, brother. Out point to end all out points. But that was the result of surveys in three countries conducted by different people and repeated and confirmed. In other words, the whole population is living in a gorgeous outpoint. They hate taxes. They love welfare. Craziest thing you ever heard of. How can you have welfare without taxes? You can't do it. Nobody solved it today, not even the genius Keynes. And certainly not the lame brains in charge of some of these areas. Not necessarily Scandinavia. I'm sure somebody could figure it out. I could figure it out. I have figured it out. I tackled it one day as a problem, found out the why, just from that outpoint. It really wouldn't matter how much money a government issued, providing everyone it paid was producing facilities to produce. Now, if it's got to have a huge welfare area, it shouldn't have any welfare area at all. It ought to be not public works, as formerly described, and back in the Italian Renaissance and so on, they always described public works as you mustn't produce anything productive. Franklin Delano Roosevelt had that idea, too. Don't build anything that's productive. It's actually stated in his speeches and his orders and so forth. Sure way to accomplish inflation. The amount of money in the country exceeds the amount of things there is to buy. That's inflation. When the amount of products in the country exceed the amount of money there is to buy things, that's deflation, upsets. Both of them upset the economics field. There's policy letters on this if you're further interested. But what I'm talking about is they could give away money like confetti in a government, providing everybody they gave it to was providing production facilities, new production facilities. Supposing they were running around putting an atomic pile in it every 1,000 square miles in America. Supposing they were putting express highways and rail and transport lines, harbor facilities. Supposing they were putting in raw material development areas where they could get raw material in a hurry. Supposing that was what the government money was spent on, they'd catch up all the time with their inflation, don't you see? So it can be solved because the country would be issuing money in double handfuls, but it would also be producing in same proportion because somebody would have put in the basic production facilities. Do you follow? But the basic production facilities, now all of that may be very upstairs and esoteric and political, but the main the main thing that you've got to keep your eye on is that you don't invest in non-productive personnel. And that way, all of your personnel problems will solve. Just don't do it. You are not a welfare state. Now, that sounds very hard-boiled. But look, the welfare state punishes actively, I don't say penalizes, but punishes actively every producer. It fines him for producing. He's making money left and right, so they take it away from him and give him to somebody who isn't working. Ooh, that's a weird system when you get right down to it. In other words, neglect the guy who is working and hand it all to the downstat. The cave-in of any society begins with the reward of the downstat. It's just a way of life. If you keep on rewarding downstats, you'll get just exactly what you continuously reward. You'll get downstats, and the stats will go down, and the producing members of the activity will disappear because they will be too heavily overloaded. So remember that when you award a downstat, you are penalizing an upstat, inevitably and invariably. You go down the street and you give some coins to a beggar, fine, it does something for your soul and so on. That's perfectly all right. But for God's sakes, leave it at that. Now, this sounds very uncharitable, but my experience with downstats is they're trying to be. They're trying to do themselves in. And that isn't my explanation for it or justification for it, because I found out that if a guy is down and down on his luck and you give him a leg up or something like that, why, he'll make it. But the professional downstat won't. I'm an expert at this. I'm giving you advice which I violate all the time. I almost caused a riot once in Pekin, distributing coins to beggars. Damn near lost my life in the process, too. And I'll always give a guy three breaks and so forth, but recognize it for what it is. It's a frailty. But I never want to overlook the one guy who will make it. I never want to overlook the guy who's had a bad break, because this universe can give a guy bad breaks. So there is no harsh, tough line asserted here. You'll make the mistake yourself. Please don't continue to make it. That's all. You know, if you're right more often than you are wrong, you will be a success. That's for sure. And don't think that you will ever run a perfect score in all directions. You won't. It's one of these impossible targets. Absolutes are unobtainable. Perfection, God Almighty. It's like art. The formula for art, the fellow can go on and go on and go on trying to make a perfect picture. He's forgotten that art simply is an assistance to communication. The point where it communicates is the point where it's finished. Oh, you can fancy it up. You can go beyond that point. A lot of our promo falls far short of being able to communicate. I was just looking with horror at a little batch of promo from an org that is doing very well. I'm about to wrap their knuckles till they're raw. The copywriting on it is ghastly. They have a message to deliver in each of these pieces of promotion, which is obscured in the small print. There's everything on this to attract attention except the message. Interesting, huh? The thing is just absolutely swamped in all kinds of text, which doesn't mean anything at all. And if the fellow read clear down to the end and looked in the middle of a long paragraph, he might find the message in very small print. It's like those clauses in insurance. We hereby insure your life for $125,000. Come on, pitch game. Insurance companies. Poof. No wonder they build big buildings. They never make their money out of insurance. They make it out of swindles. As the beneficiary in somebody's will and so forth, they very often say, what policy? Do you have a copy of it as beneficiary? No? Well, that's tough. One time, a $10,000 policy on a girl. $10,000 policy on a woman who had died was invalidated because she had registered her age as different on the polls than she had registered it to the insurance company by 1 year. Real swindles. So the small print racket enters into promo. The message isn't there, so it doesn't communicate. It has nothing to do with the quality. It just doesn't communicate. Now, if you did that up with a $100,000 artist and carried the same error on communication through, it would do you a nice job of bankruptcy. So you, in your turn, you're grooving up somebody, you're grooving up somebody, you're grooving up somebody, and you're striving for perfection. All right. At what point does it become functional? That's what you've got to determine. Not at what point does it become perfect. And that is something which you really should remember, and it'll save you a lot of heartbreaks. So, with downstats, you've got to realize that at some point you have tried and the try is over. And that is determined on whether or not there has been marked improvement. And if there hasn't been improvement, if the downstat is still downstat and going downstatter, and you're sweating your guts out, just remember that you may not be paying any attention to upstats around you who could use your help too. And just remember, you may be spending the coins of the org in a very, very, very open-handed fashion that is not warranted. It is those errors which chop you up on personnel. Now, your product org officer HAS system went on the rocks on personnel. They couldn't get the personnel. They couldn't get them hatted fast enough, so they shoved them into the org's unhatted, and they generated DevT, and that was the end of the game, practically, because they had no pool. Very often, you will find HCO just loves to use the tech unit as a personnel pool. So you have to determine, where is the personnel pool? Is it in tech? Is it in the org? No, it isn't. The personnel pools you have are PE, students' courses. You let them finish, by the way. And your CF. And those are your personnel pools. Now, you notice I haven't said anything about the raw public. Now, AOSHDK at one time had a very bad slump. We suddenly told AOSHDK, mistakenly, that they couldn't go out on the street and grab somebody and put them in the yard. And they promptly started falling on their heads. That's right. They were taking perfectly raw meat and flinging them into the yard, and we didn't think this was right. And the second they stopped doing this, they started crashing. It almost undid a CO, by the way. So I won't say that raw public is not a personnel pool. It is. We used to use employment agencies in England as a personnel pool for making Scientologists with. And we did that in a very remarkable fashion. We would hire these people, usually student typists, and we would put them on letter registration and other clerical posts in the org. And one day I did a survey. And I found out that we were getting customers this way. Those girls would stay around, or those guys would stay around just so long, and they would hear all this, and they would see all this, and they were living right in the midst of it. And the next thing you know, why, they wanted to be an auditor, or they wanted to be something or other, and they would go sign up, and they would borrow some money, or they would scrounge it one way or the other, and they'd sign up. It wasn't actually even a free gift at that time. They had to pay for it. And we found out that this was a very interesting pool for PCs and for students and for auditors. So raw public is not necessarily it. But putting ads in trade journals is something you will find won't work. Putting an ad in the newspaper, we want staff members and so on, you won't get anything. Apparently has to be by a sort of a personal contact. So you can't say public at large is a personnel pool, but there are certain sections of the public that are. But your best personnel pools, by experience and so on, is your CF and so on. Don't do what Toronto did. Toronto Crisis Stats one time, it found out that its best personnel pool was its PCs. So everybody they had on their sign-up lines, they hired for staff. And then all of a sudden, there wasn't anybody buying any auditing. That was stupid, too. So where you get this personnel from can be difficult or unsuccessful or expensive. But on that point alone will depend the success of the organization and the establishment officer. If you can get personnel, and if you don't continue to reward downstats, and if you root the personnel off that are just not even vaguely going to make it, then you will have lots of coins to spend on personnel. You see where you save it. And you can always have personnel in training. It's a very remarkable situation, the handling of personnel. Very remarkable, a lot of expertise involved in this. Let me tell you how not to recruit somebody for an org. Well, if you join this org, we'll give you training, we'll give you processing, and we'll give you all kinds of service, and you instantly employ nothing but PCs. Reference, HCOB, degraded being. And you'll have an org full of PCs, and they'll all sit around waiting to be audited, and that's all there is there. People sitting around waiting to be audited. Makes a funny-looking org, doesn't it? So therefore, the ESTO will make or break on this subject, because it was this subject which broke the product org system. That was what broke the product org system. Not only was there not enough people establishing, but nobody was really paying attention to this factor of personnel or showing any good sense with regard to personnel at all. Hire nothing but PCs. Go to the wrong personnel pools. Use the org as a personnel pool. The TEO has just accumulated 15 people he's got onto full-time training for org staff members. And whish, 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 whish. All of a sudden, he's got none. Oh, don't think it hasn't happened. It happens repeatedly, obsessively. Somebody gets the qual division all built up, and then whoosh, 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 all of a sudden, no division. Why? It's just that people haven't solved the personnel problem. Now, just as you will not audit a PC who is dead drunk and start major rundowns before you have even got him on the meter, so there is a standard way of going about this. And that is simply to locate where personnel are available that might be interested in being a staff member. Now, we've got a whole bunch of applications down here of people who want to come to FLAG. And when they were all surveyed out, there were some of them wanted to come for training. There were some of them wanted to come for the great processing we had. Mm-hmm. And there was a body of them that wanted to come to FLAG to be part of the team that had the show on the road. And those, of course, were the only ones we were interested in. Do you see? So you have to make some channel by which you can sort this out. Now, the more downstats you get on staff, the less upstats you will hire. If you get too many downstats, it'll be too tumultuous. It won't set a good example and won't attract any people at all. So you can hire downstats until you can't hire anybody. And that is one of the primary things that blocked PAC recruitment. For a while there, people had an art. Whoever was on, actually the person who was on personnel has been sinning the worst, has been removed. But there was an art there for a while, and I think the interview must have gone something like this. Oh, you wish to join the Sea Org. Well, very good. Do you have a psychiatric institutional background? The fellow said, well, yes, I do. Oh, that's fine. Yes, that's good. Are you currently on hard drugs? LSD, can't get along without LSD. You sure you can't get along without it? Oh, well, that's good. That's fine. That's good. And do you owe anybody any money? Oh, you owe about $55,000. Oh, that's nice. Yes, that's fine. Good. All right. Hey, you're really making it, boy. Are you in good physical health? Oh, you have diabetes and a broken leg, and your brain has been amputated. Yeah, well, that's fine. You qualify. Because, you see, if you join the Sea Org, why, we're going to process you day and night for the next 8 years, and you see how to go about it wrong. Must have been. We received one group aboard FLAG here, a group of six. About the grimmest scene I think I've seen in many a day. One of them, when she was offloaded, promptly went to Paris, scrounged an operation off the American embassy, told the Paris org that she was a Sea Org appointee for that org, messed it up from one end to the other, went up to Copenhagen. The guys up there weren't in the know. They didn't open their mail or read it or something. And they let her recover on board from the operation and took care of her, at which moment she let out horrible screams, ran up and down the dock, and told the police that she had been kidnapped. Got the ship in the newspaper. Institutional case. She'd been in institutions for years. We offloaded her. We weren't fast enough or positive enough, mostly because we never dreamed anybody would let her in an org or aboard. Serious. So weird flaps can occur on this line. Now, what's the immediate opposite reaction? Don't have anybody. You will find a whole org will suddenly go into a ridge. Complete group agreement. Nobody is going to join this group. We've had it. You get it? So it'll go from one extreme to the other. Total slop, total incompetent personnel actions will go over to exactly no personnel actions, mostly because there's a group agreement gets there. Please don't have any more green people. You understand? It's the wrong why. Don't have any more green people here. We can't take them. That's too much. Bing, bing. So there is a way to bring people into an org. And we try to solve it on the basis of recruitment actions, which are sensible recruitment actions. Use the proper pools. Approach the proper pools, like PE courses and CF and various other actions. Auditors' classes, the public and by direct contact line, and keep your standards up. Hold your standards up. And you say, well, if we hold our standards up, we won't get anybody. Well, right now, you can't say that nobody could join the Sea Org unless if he'd ever taken drugs. I mean, you couldn't do that. Because there isn't anybody left on the planet. But you can require the drug rundowns be given to the person. Even that is stretching it. That's going too, a little bit too far. But is the guy functional in spite of having been on drugs? That is the question which you really should ask. Is he still functional? Guys who have been obsessively or continuously on LSD take a long time to handle. The hard drugs and so on. Soft drugs, minor drugs, it doesn't matter much. But the medical doctors standing there pouring people full of morphine and pouring people full of everything you can think of. And if there aren't hard drug cases around, the medical doctor will make some. So it doesn't much matter. Now this drug thing, LSD, we can make them recover, providing we know it. You see, providing we know it. It doesn't take too awfully long to do a drug rundown. But it's something you would require before the person went on to full pay or something like this. You would actually require that it occur with no further nonsense. One of the reasons it has to occur will be of interest to you. An individual is terrified of his bank in too many cases when he has been on drugs. Drugs caused his bank to flare up. He saw the pictures, and after that he said, no more, that's it. Ooh, no more. I'm never going to look at my bank again. That's sort of the postulate. Now this person, unfortunately, is sometimes found clear up in the OT levels. They're the rabbits. And you trace back each one of these OT rabbits. It goes back to couldn't do Dianetics, didn't like engrams, goes back to drugs. So it's one of these things, it's all solved. But that is one of the types of things you run into in personnel. Now, it isn't true that if the guy is down or something, or he's had some bad breaks or something like that, that he won't make a good staff member. That's not true. It isn't sweepingly true at all. The guy looks like a hippie to end all hippies until hippier hippies come along and so forth. You can still straighten him out. You can do some remarkable things. At some point, optimism ends, however, on that particular guy. And let it end before too many coins are expended. So that's what broke down the Prodorg system, is just not knowing some of this expertise which I'm telling you right now about personnel. The main thing is to get personnel and continue to get personnel. One time we had Auckland, had a bunch of St. Hillers. I think they had 6 or 8 St. Hillers. And they had had enough experience now with other people coming into the org and with Scientologists in the New Zealand area working for the org and causing devtee and upsets, that they shut the gate. And they did another one of these. The only person that was going to work for that org now was a St. Hiller, and that was that. Naturally, the org started to go downhill. You can imagine sending somebody to St. Hill just to have a receptionist. And so they had the answer wrong. So the wrong way is to shut the gate. And the best way and the fastest way I have ever built up an org, which is to open the gate wide open and keep the route wide open right on through crawling out. But you will find in practice that an org forgets this. It forgets to keep the other door open, the back door. And that just people will just stay there and stay there, and you will have more and more staff and more devotee and more upset. So I just walk down to the org board and look at all the temporaries that hadn't qualified in the first 3 weeks and so on and just rule them out through qual. Qual was supposed to tell them exactly how they could make themselves employable, and they were even supposed to put together a little course and so forth to handle the guy and make him happier with it. And while that was working, it was very functional. But the second I turned my back, again, they closed that back door. I imagine it was done by this fantastic demand for personnel. We have to have more personnel. But then I found out there were many times 6 or 8 people in a division. The divisional secretary didn't even know were there. He didn't have anything for them to do. In other words, the thing was overmanned because they were not overhatted. There was no establishment officer to count their noses and say, well, you do this, and you do this, and you do this, and you do this. Now, you'll find out that a personnel who goes bad because he has not been hatted. Staffs that aren't hatted go criminal. This is not a light fact. This is a fact. You let a lot of guys run around unhatted, disorganized, and so forth, they'll start doing themselves in everybody else. It's just lack of hattedness. So when you start to hat too late, and you don't hat adequately enough, and you don't get the guy producing on the things he's supposed to be producing on his post, then you can expect an enormous amount of criminality and devtee in an organization which has both gates open. So you have to be fast. Just take them on fast, put them on fast, add them fast, get them producing fast. They can't produce, they can't produce, they can't produce. They don't know, they don't know, they don't know. They're more and more effect, more and more effect. Going downhill, they're not quite sure. Gate, 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 back gate, another personnel on, please, please, please. It's a fast system, not a slow one. 2-3 weeks is plenty. That was how St. Hill was built from 8 staff members to over 100 in a matter of weeks. And how its income was rocketed from nowhere right up through the roof and stayed there. But we had a good HCO, and I was riding that HCO all the time, and I was handling the personnel, which was the little factor that nobody has ever noticed about St. Hill since, that LRH is not sitting in his study doing all of their personnel handling. This ship started having real personnel trouble on the 4th of March, 1971. That was the date I stopped handling personnel. Now, why is this? Why? Well, I bother to make it my business to know who the guy is and what he is doing. I may not even lay eyes on him. These messengers you see out here are the sharpest cats you ever wanted to see in this particular direction. They're trained on tone scale. They're trained on observation. They know every man, woman, and child in the ship. You ought to see one of them kick another one in the ankle when all of a sudden they don't know that there's been a post change someplace. No, they're right up with it. Why? Because they're always being asked to check up, to check up. That's what I'm handling personnel. Check up, check up, check up. Personnel falls down by not having adequate records. The best record in the world is your skull. Paper will never substitute for a bear trap memory. Oh, yeah, I know that guy. It's 1932, he's some long son, yeah. Way back. Bullpen data. Bullpen data. That's what it takes for personnel. You start going over personnel records, and you say so-and-so and so-and-so, and it's a so-and-so, and it's a this and that, and this guy was so-and-so, and now we've got this fellow so-and-so, and we've got this fellow so-and-so. For instance, I've just made an appointment right now, which is a risky appointment. I will remember that I've made a risky appointment. I'll be checking up on it within 4 or 5 days. I'll be checking up on it with the establishment officer in charge of that also. How well does he hat? How well does he hat? How well does he hat? And he's going someplace else if he doesn't hat well, because it's a risky appointment. You get it? Personnel actually requires voluminous files. A personnel officer who doesn't know all the posts of the org and doesn't know all there is to know about every person in that org will fail. Just like that. Because he can't make sensible appointments. He doesn't know what he's appointing the person to, and he doesn't know who he's appointing to it. Those are the two things you have to know. Who are you appointing to it, and to what is that person being appointed to? See, that's what you have to know. And you have to keep yourself briefed, 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 briefed. I read, for instance, I read mission debriefs. And it's not always true, but you go through some of these debriefs. I haven't been doing it recently. I'm in an overwhelm on it. We've just had tons of observation missions out, and I've got about a half a foot stack of observation missions. I've got about a 2 or 3 foot stack of personnel missions and so forth of data. And I have not had time to go over that. It's not much of a backlog. It's just a few days. I've got to go over all that, but the reason why I'm going to go over all of the observation of an area is I got to get some kind of an operating plan together that I sent the mission out to get enough observation on so that an operating plan can be put together for. He says data, observation, observation, observation. But along with this went personnel missions, ethics missions, that sort of thing. Get all kinds of records and so on. Who exists in these areas? What are they all about? And out of that combined set of stuff, why, enough data will emerge that we will all of a sudden be able to put a plan together that is in keeping with the resources. What's the resources? It's the people we got in the area. All right, we have to get a plan that meshes the people we've got with the observation of the area so as to make it come out right. I got a why for the area. I've also got to go over the observations of the area to check that why. It's not enough for people to keep telling me so-and-so's no good. You see, as the why. So-and-so's no good is the why. So-and-so's no good is the why. Those are just reports. Now, I may get enough data coming in from enough sources, which, when compared with the stats, might possibly compare to a so-and-so is no good. That might possibly come in on the crosshairs of the rifle. It may all come together. All right, well, at that moment, it is a workable truth. But the CEO of an org has just pulled up blooper, the like of which I've never heard of, and I would have thought he has been around long enough to know better that there's been a person across my lines 3 times as a tiger. Great big woolly striped tiger. Every time the stats went to hell or an org went to hell, this guy was in an executive position. Just by natural selection over 2 or 3 years, this name keeps dropping out every time the stats crash. The stats have just crashed, and I find out he's put this person in his registrar. He must have rocks in his head. He must not know his business. That's what you suddenly say to yourself. He must not know his business. Now, let's analyze exactly what he doesn't know. He doesn't know the stats and the person. We grant that he knows the form of the org, but he doesn't know the stats of the person. He doesn't have bullpen information. He doesn't keep himself informed. One bad report, one fall on the head, oh, to hell with it. Skip it. But by the time this sort of thing starts counting up, all right, so this guy had a bad break, all right. I can get an out point on it. Well, the org stayed there. It didn't disappear. But this sort of thing keeps coming up. Then another one comes up. Same name. And another one comes up. Same name. Oh, to hell with it. So somebody sends in a personnel proposal and says, let us put Glutz in as some post that can have an influence on an org, a bad influence on an org. No, not off this desk. I don't do anything. Just beyond, no. Then I will get a hold of the list, and I will go over all of the personnel that are available for the area, and so forth. And again, out of the bullpen, I will have matched up this guy, and it was up, and this guy, and it was up, and this guy, and it was, yeah, we'll put him in there. Now, if you really wanted to do a perfect job of this, you would have to watch stats continuously against personnel. And you have no business not watching stats as an establishment officer against the personnel for those stats as an establishment officer. There was so many hours a week, I don't even know if it was so many hours a day, that the French Surrette at a time when it was really an activity. It's nothing now. It's just a bunch of totalitarian bums. Ever since the Nazis have been in there, the police forces stayed Nazi. But they, detectives of Paris, way back 19th century, this was before they had all kinds of fingerprint systems and was all done by computers and Interpol. Those guys spent a certain amount of time every week going through all the criminals in Paris and any international criminals and anything known about them, and they were just simply walking encyclopedias. I'm not saying that you're a detective. I'm just here as an analogous system, and you're not dealing with criminals. But it's an analogous thing. You spend some time. Who is this guy? What has he been? What has he done? What is he doing? Who was mixed up with this flap? Where are we continuously patching it up, patching it up? Who is in that area? Now, who is in that area that's doing all right? Yeah, but you might be the same establishment officer. It's none of your business. Oh, yes, it is. Oh, yes, it is. Because that person might be slid sideways right straight into your lap. Now, this savors of blacklisting. It savors of all kinds of nasty things. You're always willing to give the guy a break. But not to the point that he breaks your neck. Do you follow? Now, there is this. People change. You're in an operating perimeter now where people change. And they change over the years. Sometimes they don't. Usually they do. And you would find it's quite remarkable, some of the changes. And you would be remarkable, it's remarkable, how some of the tigers of yesteryear are big successes today. You'd be surprised. See? So changes occur. So you have to make an allowance for that. But when you make an allowance, look at the record. Look, what's the current record? Do you see? So, personnel, names, post, stats. The establishment officer that doesn't go down and stand in front of the stat board once in a while and say, gee, look at this nice set of stats. Who was that? And holy God, look at that. Who the hell is in that area? And who doesn't at an establishment officer conference hear about the flap that is going on in qual or distribution or something, and here these names are associated with it. See, if he doesn't register this, if he hasn't got a running registry, do you follow? The amount of data which a thetan can record and remember is infinite. He doesn't even have to put it in pictures. And you don't have to be perfect at this. You can go along on a basis of just a general impression. But before you make a decision, confirm your impression. And then you will very seldom be wrong.
This lecture is continued on the next cassette.